This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast. New podcast coming your way from Columbus, Ohio. And oh, do we have some stories to tell. Jason Botchford of The Province will join me here in a sec. Canucks in Columbus and then on to Minnesota and this leg of the five-game portion of the journey. And then there's two more after the five-day break. They'll take on Edmonton and the Winnipeg Jets. You know the deal. The podcast is always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. Proud sponsors of the BCHL Coquitlam Express and your number one overall pick for selection and inventory. Check them out online, EagleRidgeGM.com, or if you want to stroll the showroom, you can certainly do that as well. 2595 Barnett Highway in Coquitlam. And man, maybe we should have got Eagle Ridge to hook us up with some sort of vehicle to drive from Montreal to Washington, because that's really where this story begins. And before we get to Botch, let me just say, there will be lots of hockey talk, because there's just so much to get to. There will be some hockey talk, but when you go through a day like we did on Monday, and you have a podcast, you have license to vent. It's an outlet. And my God, Botch, you know, you hear the term day from hell an awful lot in life. Like you hear people, you know, their coffee order wasn't right, or, you know, coworkers ragging on them, whatever. It was a day from hell. No, we sort of redefined that a little as far as this job is concerned on Monday.
No, and certainly to me, the fans didn't make it any easier or more comfortable. Like you did post some photos as we were going through it on Twitter. And I guess it's like I kind of looked at it as vengeance for some of my shenanigans, including Flat J-Pat and whatnot. But dude, like people are fucking savages. Like they are just savages. Like you post, like there's a picture you posted of, I'm leaning back. I've got a coffee by my side. I'm just trying to relax and figure out my bearings and figure out what I'm going to do next. Our flights have been canceled. We've been told all flights to Washington have been canceled across Canada, there's this incredible vortex of freezing rain, which has shut down both airports. And I had to go through a process. They had pulled my bags off. I had to go through customs, go get my bags. And so I'm just trying to figure out, like, what's next? You snap the photo. All of a sudden, it's on Twitter. And these guys are, I'm telling you, they are breaking down every square pixel on this freaking photograph. Like all of a sudden, like guys are mad that my laces are untied. Guys are mad that I have a straw. Like I use a straw to drink coffee. And I do use a straw to drink coffee. It's my thing. It's like part of my, like I have a messenger bag, I have a dark blue jacket, and I have a coffee with a straw in it. Like that's my entire look. I can't, like you pull that straw out, I can't drink. I'm like a little baby looking at that cup. Like, how am I going to drink this? I have no idea how to drink coffee without a straw. I used to. And then I went to the straw. I can't go back anyway. So I'm dealing with all that. Guys are mad. Like, that guy found, like, a little speck on my jacket. And he's, like, announcing, like, you need to go to a laundry service. I've got three kids, you asshole. I've got lots of specks. One of them's two. I've got specks on my jacket. Another guy was mad that there was tiles on the fucking floor. He's got a big red circle going, look at those tiles. How bad is that? One guy thought I had like too much coffee drippage on the top of my lid. Like, dude, it never ended. And then on top of that, I've got Wyatt saying, yeah, let's send gifts like my way of people being mad. So then I'm deluged with gifts and then people like pissed off at, you know, my shoes need to shine. My laces are untied. Why are you wearing jeans? I was like, what? What do you mean? Why am I wearing jeans? I fucking wear jeans. I don't know why I'm wearing them. Like, I was mad I was wearing jeans. So anyways, on top of all of this, like, you and I figuring out, like, what's next? Are we going to drive? Are we going to fly to Philadelphia and drive? Are there other airports? And when you're in that situation, like every minute feels like it's 10, like it's excruciating, not knowing, like, am I going to make it? Am I going to make it for the game? Am I going to make it tonight? Do I have to drive 14 hours to get there? And through all added on top of all this is the freaking savages. And they are savage. And I like Canucks Twitter. Like, if my wife comes to me and she goes, like, in a down moment in Vancouver, and she said, oh, man, I'd really like to move back to Toronto. Like, one of the things I will say, like, can I really leave Canucks Twitter and, like, establish a new world? I don't think I can. Like, I like Canucks Twitter, but, dude, they can be savages.
I feel like I owe you an apology for posting that photo, but I purposely, it was just your feet up on the bag. I thought it kind of captured captured the moment, because it was. That was, like, what, I don't know, 20 minutes after we had learned that our flight from Montreal to Washington had been canceled. And look, you've been at this longer than I have, but I figured going into this that at some point this season there was going to be a day like this. But and we don't have the time to get into all of the twists and turns, but there were so many. But a few of my favorite moments of that day, we're sitting at the gate. We had gone through customs. We had, you know, everything, checked the bags, gone through customs. We're sitting in the gate waiting, and it's a blizzard in Montreal. Like, the snow is coming down, and then I get, like, notification on my phone. Canceled. Not delayed. Like, it went straight from being on time to canceled.
Right.
And notification pops up on my phone, and then I see some other people getting the same notification. I go to the gate agent just to confirm, and she says, yeah, just got off the phone. Your flight is canceled. You better go check with customer service. Well, I mean, there's 100 and some people in the gate. They all kind of get – all of a sudden, we're in the middle of the stampede in the Montreal airport. Like, hundreds of people, like, in a full – because you don't want to be at the end of that line. So, like, oh.
I was right at the front, man. And you were back, though, eh? Did you get lost in the stampede?
Well, I had a sandwich. I had to protect my sandwich. I had bought a Montreal smoked meat sandwich. It was the highlight of my time in Montreal, and I had this sandwich. I didn't get a chance to eat it, and now all of a sudden I'm like stampede, and we have to go, like, I don't know, 10 or 12 gates to the customer, and then we arrive at customer service. They have no clue that, like, the flood is coming, and they were totally overwhelmed. Anyways, we got through that. We decide our best course of action ultimately would be to go to Ottawa. Ottawa to Washington, there's a bunch of, you know, national capitals, there's a bunch of flights to get between.
Right, and all Air Canada flights across the country to Washington have been canceled. But if it's a United flight for some reason, it hasn't been canceled. So there's a United flight we find from Ottawa to Washington, the Dulles Airport. The next step, we got to get to Ottawa. So off we go, marching to Ottawa there.
Right, and so we're on the international side of Montreal Airport. Now we got to go domestic because we're going to Ottawa. So, all right, we go back up. We have to check our bags again. And the baggage agent at checking in Montreal.
First a lady stops us. She looks at our tickets and she says, like, you're going to miss that. If you stay on this flight, it's either going to be delayed or canceled. You're going to miss your connection. You're not going to make it. You have to get on an earlier flight. She picked out an earlier flight for us to get to. We went to the agent now to say, get us on this flight. And I have I've never seen an agent as lost. It was like she had no training. She had never been in an airport before. She had never worked for an airline before, and they put her in this role where she's got to maneuver and change boarding passes and check baggage. And, like, she was fucking lost, scrambled. Like, when I picture in my head this, like, I picture, like, eyes crossed, speaking, like, a language. It's not French. It's not English. It's, like, some mix of the two where you don't understand what she's saying. Like, it was really tough for her. And she was there, like, just for her to change our boarding passes and to send our luggage. We were there. Like, I did an entire interview with an agent as we were going through, like, for a 20-minute interview I did on the phone with an agent. And it still wasn't done. By the time I was off the phone, our bags are still not through. And she's still saying the paperwork doesn't match up. This isn't quite right. And of course, she was wrong on it all. And I do blame her for everything that happened next, like our bags getting lost. And, when we finally got to Ottawa and we were about to get on the Washington flight, they're like, you're not on this flight. All of the things that happened afterwards, I blame her for.
Right. At one point, she had my bags going to Houston.
Right.
Houston. We're in Montreal. I'm trying to get to Washington. And she's got a bag tag going to Houston. So... You're right. Like, I blame so much of the last 48 hours on her. Like, when I shut my eyes last night, like, when I tried to go to bed last night, I was just lying here in the darkness, And I just, this vision of her face in my nightmares. And I'm not going to get over this anytime soon. But, so, I, and again, there's no explanation. Like, I have no explanation. You and I have revisited this a bunch of times already.
Right.
We both got to Ottawa on separate flights. We went from Montreal. There were simultaneous Air Canada flights. So we're spending the day together.
Yeah.
We
she
go,
had us on different flights.
So we go through security, and then you just disappeared to me, and I disappeared to you, and we're messaging back and forth, and we're at different gates, and we're on different flights, but we get to Ottawa essentially at the same time.
Right, but before that, though, weren't you complaining at like when you realized, when you got through, and you're like, which Ottawa flight am I on? You're trying to figure it out. You went back to a customer rep, and you started complaining about the lady who was just with us, like way on the other side of the airport.
I did, and then all of a sudden she popped up, like out of nowhere. Like I'm now deep in the airport. I'm at gate like A30 or something. She's out front, and all of a sudden I'm trying to tell my story because they're telling me that I'm not on this flight to Ottawa, and that there's issues, and all of a sudden I'm saying, but it's all this lady's fault. Like she's the and then also she's popped up out of nowhere, and again totally oblivious to me just ragging all over her. So we leave Montreal behind in a snowstorm. We get to Ottawa, and some guy in Ottawa tells me that the flight to Washington has been canceled at that point. So I'm
But a United worker, like it wasn't just some guy. It was a guy that works for United, came up to approach you because I found you lost at like this huge ticket line. Like when we were on different flights, when we reconnected, I see you in this middle of this long ticket line, and you're like, I'm like, what are you doing here? And you're like, dude, the flight to Washington has been canceled. And I'm like, dude, no, it hasn't. Like, look at the board. It hasn't been canceled. And then you tell me that a guy from United, when you arrived, looked you in the eye and said, no, this flight is canceled. And you were about to change flights again.
You're right. I think I messaged you some sort of panic message about like how deep we're into it. And I was starting to investigate Ottawa hotels for the night. Because by now it's like 6 o'clock and we've got a 7 o'clock flight to Washington. So you talk me back from the ledge, flight's back on again, all is good. So we approach security. And security just waves you right on through. Everything's good again. Like you're going to go through security. But all of a sudden I get stopped at security now and my bag isn't showing in the system. And this is where like my luggage issue really began. But you had to have been there because the girl that was working security at the Ottawa airport, like she should have been folding jeans at Hollister or Forever 21, like the most just out of place. Like she was the head of security.
She did look like, I mean, I'm sure she was 30 but she looked like 19. And she looked exactly that, like out of an H&M or Forever 21. And she was there trying to explain. And my luggage was with yours. My luggage was just as lost as yours was, but she was willing to wave me, like, go ahead, and you, there was no chance. You weren't getting on.
Right. So I get told to go stand in the corner. They got to sort things out here. She can't find my luggage anywhere. You're gone because you want to go right. So you go ahead. And I'm standing there for like 15 or 20 minutes. And then all of a sudden, my Hollister angel calls me back and says, like, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to do this, but I'm going to give you this pass that's going to get you through security without your luggage in the system. So, like, I don't know. Like, maybe I sweet-talked her. Who knows? Anyways, so she waves me on through. I get through security and customs. I find you. You're riding. Like, we think, okay, like, green light. Flight's on. 45 minutes away. We're going to get there. We're going to get to Washington tonight. This is going to be good. And then, as if that's not enough, I say, I'm going to go up to the gate agent here in Ottawa, see if my luggage is in the system yet. I go up there, and I get this wide-eyed look from the gate agent in Ottawa, who says to me, sir, I've never seen this situation before. You have a boarding pass, but you're not on this flight. And so for 15 minutes, she's calling in Superior. She's making phone calls. Now I'm thinking, like, again, we're through security in Ottawa, and now they're going to tell me, like, I'm not on this flight? And I'm thinking, like, but you're okay. Like, you know, just like security. Like, yeah. Things are going to be fine for you, but, like, I am an issue here. So they work, and they pull some strings, and they make it all happen, and they finally clear me. And I say to you, like, you might want to check just because this happened to me. And so, sure enough, you approach the gate agent and you get the very same treatment.
Yeah, and it all goes back to cross-eyed and painless there, or cross-eyed and painful from Ottawa. Like, it, like, she had created boarding passes, phantom boarding passes that didn't exist. They were boarding passes to nowhere, absolutely nowhere. They were not boarding passes to get on that plane. Thank God. Thank God there were actually seats that they found for us on the, because we would have been stranded in Ottawa, and who knows if we would have made the game or not. Or I don't know what would we have driven? Like, what? I don't know what we would have done from
Ottawa. Well, I didn't want to drive because, like, the conditions in Montreal were abysmal. Like, who knows what you would have encountered. It's, yeah, like, it's like a 12-hour drive. Like, our best plan, and we've talked this through since, was probably getting on a flight to Philadelphia, which is, I think, like a 3-hour drive. To Washington, and we could have either done it that night, or if conditions were bad, you know, we would have had the morning, could have got up in the morning and driven in. Anyways, the United flight to Washington was fine.
The flight's fine, but then it's the ultimate punchline. Like, that I've never seen something like this out of all this chaos. And it was more than just us, right? Like, Cheech and Garrett, their flights were delayed. iMac was flying in, and his flight had to circle around, and he went back to New York. But we land in Washington, and I'm telling you, man, there is not a single drop of rain falling. There is not a there's not a bit of ice anywhere. No snow. Like, it's literally like one of those February days in Vancouver where it's overcast, but it's just warm enough that dudes can still be on their seawall walk in shorts. And you're like, should that guy be wearing shorts right now? I don't think so. But there were guys as we were coming in on that tarmac with t-shirts on.
Yeah, like workers, airport worker guys, yeah, out there. It's 11 o'clock at night and they're out there in their t-shirts. And you're right. Like, it felt like we had flown into Bermuda or somewhere, like Bahamas. Like, it was. And I say the flight was fine. And I mean, technically the flight was fine. The guy in the seat beside me, though, like, it's dark, and he's got his phone, and he's watching something. I don't know what's going on. And I thought he was kind of, like, stifling sneezes. Like, he sort of these body convulsions. And it was a little awkward, but whatever, to each their own. And then I kind of look over, and he's watching Comedians in Cars. And he was suppressing laughter, but, like, he was just shaking, like, for the entire flight, an hour. This guy, like, I've never seen anybody react to anything on Netflix the way this guy reacted to Comedians in Cars.
I know. You told me it was, like, the Fallon. Like, I couldn't believe. Like, if I was beside him, because I hate Fallon, and if he was watching the Fallon episode, I would say, like, dude, can you skip at least this one? Like, I know, I just can't stand watching you laugh to Fallon. It would just drive me bananas. But then in Washington, we asked people, like, was it Armageddon here? Was it earlier? Was there an ice storm? Or was there a blackout? Was there sleet? And every dude is like, no, it was totally fine here today. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
So we land at 11 o'clock, and of course, luggage isn't there. So we have to go file the claim with United, and that set the whole... where is our luggage for the next couple of days in motion? But as we sort of bring the travel travails story to an end, for me, I don't know about you, but one of the real, like, kicks in the nuts was we show up at the rink the next day, and Travis Green knew the whole story. Yeah. Oh, like, he had every detail of our story.
And it could not have made him happier. Like, he had big belly. Like, Travis Green laughs, and he has laughed throughout interviews. But these were big, like, legitimate belly laughs. And he could not get enough. He brought it up multiple times. He brought it up the first time we saw him. He brought it up again right before we're about to scrum with him. And then afterwards, after the scrum is done, he's been grilled about all these issues for like 10 minutes. And it was a pretty good grilling until we got to the Brock Besser portion of events. But it was all done. People are dissipating. Ben, like, the PR staff says, okay, no more questions. Everyone's leaving. He stays in his position to further begin to laugh and make fun of us for, you know, almost not making it. And being in the same clothes with no luggage, like he had a very good time with that tale. Which was he briefed? Like, does that mean he was briefed? Like, either he's following you on Instagram or Twitter, or the PR staff sat down and here's what's happening to Botchford and JPAT, and he was briefed on it.
No, he knew each of the stops, I swear. Like, he probably knew the story about the security girl in Ottawa. Like, I'm surprised he wasn't asking me questions about her. But, like, he did seem to take great delight. And, look, it put a smile on the guy's face, and there isn't a whole lot to smile about.
He actually knew more about it than my wife knew about the story. Because I'm not, like, I don't want to worry her, so I don't, like, text her and call her through all of this stuff. But she contacted me and said, like, your luggage isn't there. Are you okay? And I said, like, how the fuck do you know that? I haven't told you. I don't want to worry you. Like, how do you know this? And they said, oh, my coworkers are, it's like been on the radio. My coworkers are coming up and telling me. So I guess you brought it up on one of the mornings. And anyway, so she, Travis Green knew more about my travel problems than my wife.
Well, my issue with my wife, and you're right, I kind of, it became a bit of an ongoing thing. Every radio hit that I did, they wanted the sort of 2-hourly update. So, you know, dude, where's my luggage? And the luggage finally, ultimately did arrive last night. So all is good now.
But out of the blue, like, we called for days trying to track this luggage. And I was actually in Washington, just about to leave on a flight, to get out of there, to get here to Columbus. And like 5 minutes before I was about to walk out the hotel and hop in an Uber, the guy calls me up in an unmarked van. He's like, hey, guy, man. And I'm like, what? He's like, I got your luggage. I'm like, are you for real? He goes, yeah, I'm in Georgetown right now. I'm on my way. Which Renaissance are you at? And I said, I told him. He said, I'll be there in 10. And sure enough, he was like, there was no warning. I had spent like hours talking to people on the phone. You were direct messaging all kinds of airport workers. And all of a sudden, there my luggage showed. So thank God my flight wasn't 20 minutes earlier, because I would have been long gone.
There's your life lesson too, by the way. We like to think of the podcast as a bit of a public service. I just forget phoning or the, you know, there's supposed to be this online like luggage tracker. That did not work at all. I just went straight to DM, and I give United some credit. They kept me posted, and eventually my luggage, I was just about, like, I was 2 minutes away from shutting things down here in the hotel last night in Columbus, and I get a phone call from front desk, and she's like, your bag is here. So I've got.
DM is the best way to
Go. I would absolutely just don't do the 1-800 number or anything. But you talk about your wife, and I was the guilty guy. You're right. So I kind of put it out there. People were wondering. They wanted the updates. My wife, though. Like, you know, I'm FaceTiming at night, whatever. Like, she doesn't really care that, like, I don't have my clothes. She's like, I want the suitcase back. I just want the suit. I was like, you don't understand. Like, don't even start with me about, I want the, we've got a matching set. I don't want to have to buy. Like, no, this is not how this is going to work. This is all about me. Like, it's all about me right now. I don't care. Like, if the luggage showed up and there were holes kicked in the side of it, but I had my stuff, like, I would be delighted. I would have been delirious. And she's, we need the suitcase. So, anyways, I think we put all of that behind us.
Hopefully.
But I made the remark to one of my colleagues. I said, I thought losing my luggage was bad. And then I watched the Canucks in the second period in Washington the other night.
Well, it's a cheap shot. I mean, the team, they're in a tough way right now. It's a really difficult time. And I think you can see this. Like, it's Wayne. Like, Travis has got a brave front. And I forget how did you describe his a brave face that he put on it? And he seemed to be taken aback by that when you threw that at him, that he's putting on a brave face. But he is. He's been putting on a brave face here, and he's been trying to defend his troops and all of that. But after that game in Washington, you could tell that it's eating away at their hockey souls, that it's eating away at these competitive guys to be this. I know that after the Washington game, they said, we played good first 15 minutes and we played a good last 15 minutes, but they, all of them understood that they weren't winning that game. Like, how it didn't matter if Delzato did something else with the net, and it didn't matter that Gudbranson batted a puck in. They weren't on the same level. They weren't even close to being on the same level as the Washington Capitals. And that was the look and the kind of vibe that I got in the room. And you put it, it was a pretty blunt question that you threw to Delzato, which was like, is this what you signed up for? And you got a great answer. And it was that, you know, he said, this is the toughest stretch. And this team last year wasn't any good. The Flyers, he's been on the Flyers last few years. And he was a scratch like 15 times last year on a bad team. this right now, this is the toughest, worst stretch of his entire hockey career. And I thought it was, I thought that that was maybe the most telling moment that we've had, probably most honest moment that we've had on this road trip.
Yeah, and Jacob Markstrom has always been blunt. He hates losing, and unfortunately, that's all this team is doing right now. And, you know, he gave it the old, it's awful, it sucks. He's used those lines a few times. But, Botch, like, we thought at the tail end of Willie D's time, like, that was just throwaway hockey, right? Like, those games, they meant nothing. They played like they meant nothing, and they looked like they meant nothing. And they finished last season 2-15-2.
Yeah.
Or 2-13-2, a 17-game run. 2-13-2. Well, right now, they're in a 2-11-2 run. Like, right. And Columbus and Minnesota and Edmonton and Winnipeg still out on the road before they play another home game. Like, this thing's probably not getting any better in the short term. Like, I don't know. I didn't think it would get to these depths. But as we have been reminded repeatedly in Montreal, and again, post-game in Washington, they'll always have Toronto.
Yeah, I do wonder how they keep referring back to this Toronto game, which they did. I mean, they played well, but I remember telling people afterwards, like, here's the problem with the Toronto game, is that they all know, like, that's as well as they can play, and they still ended up losing the game. And that can be super dispiriting for a group, knowing that you played your best, and you still came up short. You still blew a two-goal third-period lead. So I will say that the difference between last year, and it was brutal. Like, I'm not even sure if people realize how brutal it was. Like, after 43 games, that team had 44 points, 6 points ahead of this team. That team went, I think, 10, 25, and 6 down the stretch. And you talk about that last 2-15-2 run. Willie had checked the fuck out. Like, Willie was not doing anything. He was not moving pieces around. Travis is coaching his ass off. Like, he is really trying not to have this team humiliated and embarrassed. He's meeting with guys. He's trying to motivate guys by scratching them. He's trying to figure out who fits best with, you know, in his mind, who fits best with his lineup. He's trying to turn Dowd into like a Sutter, a shutdown guy, because he, that's his whole, you know, one of the big, like, with Sutter, like, one of the big, we saw this earlier in the season, it's obvious that he likes to, and he's talked about this, he likes to have a line that he's, in his words, he can hang his hat on. He likes to have his line that when he knows Ovechkin's coming out and when he knows McDavid's coming out, it may not be the best line, but it's his line. He's going to throw it out there. It's going to be his defensive shutdown line. He's lost that with Sutter. He's been trying to find it ever since, you know, kind of blind in the dark. He's trying to put Dowd in that role, and Dowd has, I mean, he had a bad game in Washington, but overall, Travis had been, he'd been playing better. I don't want to see Dowd playing exactly as much as Henrik. I don't think that that's the right way to go, but that's what he believes. And he's been been the big difference. Like, he is coaching, man. He's out there meeting and like, you got to play this way. And he's scratching Pouliot because he's felt Pouliot hasn't been good enough. And like, he's doing things to try to not be a NHL punchline. I'm not sure it hasn't worked so far yet. Maybe it will. I have to think that the next 3 months are going to be better than the last 3 months of last year. But I don't know. Like, they are 6 points shy of Willie's team. And that is pretty significant.
Right. And I don't think enough has been made of, and I was sitting in the room here last night just looking at some numbers. In the last 21 games, they have 5 wins and 3 overtime losses. So there's 13 points in a 21-game stretch. That's a quarter of the season.
Right.
13 points times 4. That's a 52-point pace they have been on for the last 21 games. Like, the Colorado Avalanche, we talked last year's Colorado Avalanche, historically bad, with, I think, 49 points. And for the last 21 games, I mean, the Canucks have been on a, you know, that same sort of path. And yeah,
that's with, because since there's a point in November, I think mid-November, to basically, the last time I looked was yesterday, that Besser had led the NHL in goals, led the entire league in goals. So despite having this kind of this incredible run, as electric as we've seen from a rookie since I've been in Vancouver, like, this incredible run, despite that, 5 wins in 21 games. And he's not going to continue to lead the NHL for months at a time in goals. Like, he is going to regress. And what happens then?
Well, I think we may be starting to see the start or the beginning of that. He has 1 in his last 5, which isn't alarming, but just considering how productive he has been, you know, and people, oh, give him the rookie of the year. It's a long season, and he'll be in that conversation. And look, I hope he can keep it up. He's been a great story. He's really been the story for the Canucks. But it is going to be a challenge. I mean, games get tighter in the second half. Teams still have things to play for. And so, you know, every time I think that maybe there'll be a dip, I mean, that's one of the, to me, one of the most impressive things is when I think there's going to be a dip, he rises above. And, you know, in Toronto, the big stage on Saturday night, we should go back to Toronto for a couple of things, because that was the last time we podcast last Friday, before they practiced and then they played the Leafs Saturday night. You're a Toronto guy. I'm a soft West Coaster. Fuck, it was cold in Toronto.
Yeah, and I feel bad because we've just complained. Like, I don't want to always be complaining. Like, I think everyone complains about their job, though. And I do like the job is great. And so I'm reluctant to constantly complain about it. But it, like, I got out of that arena that night at like 1:45 by the time I was finished putting everything together for the Provies. And there was not, like, I couldn't get an Uber. There wasn't a cab in sight. And, like, I had to walk, like, two blocks. Like, I had gloves. I had earmuffs. I had long johns. I was layered, dude. And I still felt like I was going to die. Like, it was the coldest day in history. The coldest couple of days, anyway, in Toronto history.
Well, I always judge it by, like, the local news. Like, if I think it's cold, but, you know, there's nothing about it on the news. But, like, if it's the lead story or the second story locally, like, how cold it is in a place, then clearly it's cold. And at the practice facility on Friday, we shared an Uber back downtown. Like, we ran 20 steps. Probably, 20 steps, nothing. And my face hurt. Like, by the time I jumped in the car, the driver's like, yeah, you got the, you know, the backseat heat. You can, you know, you can adjust it. I was like, I'll take anything, man. Just warm me up.
But that sweet
heat. So practice on the Friday was funny for a couple things. First of all, like, Brock Besser was posing with these some product. It was like a sports drink or something. It was called The Flow. Yeah. Right. And so, like, I saw some of his teammates had it, but, like, they had brought it in. Obviously, again, people, if, like, there's a suggestion that he's not getting his due around the NHL.
Right.
And I think we saw in Toronto, like, they couldn't get enough Brock Besser. The national media was all over it. You know, somebody's bringing him the Flow product to pose with, but this made no sense. But again, it goes back to how cold it was in Toronto. The guy is known as the Flow because he's got this amazing hair.
Right.
He didn't just have it covered with a toque. He had the hoodie on over the toque. He can't be the Flow and double cover. Like, that makes no sense. How does that make sense?
Oh, man. No, I meant to put that picture in the Bravies. I just haven't got around to it. But it is, like, it's unbelievable to see him. Like, this image, he looks like he's trying to sell the product. And there's not a strain of hair. But what about Tanev's dad at that practice, man? That was a sight to behold. Like, that dude does not stop talking.
Right, which makes no sense because we've had some fun. I mean, Chris is a good guy, but he's not the most talkative. Like, and he's laid back and, you know, it's just like sometimes it's not really fair to say it's like pulling teeth with Tanev these days. And we haven't talked to him yet since he lost his teeth in Toronto the other night. But you're right. Like, so there's his dad, Mike, is at the practice facility and the Canucks are on the ice. And, like, Mike Tanev is just directing traffic. Like, Friedman's at the practice,
yeah.
And Mike Tanev's like, Elliot! And he's just, like, signaling him over. And Elliot Friedman, like, you know, on command, goes over to talk to and has his time with Mike Tanev. And then when he's fun, he dismisses Elliot. Like, he's done with Elliot. And then, like, he just bending Stan Smeal's ear for what? Like half an hour at least.
A long time. And Smeal was not all. Every time I looked over at Smeal, he's just nodding his head. He's just nodding and nodding and nodding. And it's just this like long winded conversation that just never ended. Like I kept like turning around. Is it over yet? No, not. Mike's still going. Man, he has a lot to say. Maybe that's why Chris is like he is though, because growing up, that he could not have got a word in that household. Like there's just no, like him and his brother must have just been sitting there. And my dad's kind of like that too. Like he'll just tell story after story after story and just roll my eyes. And I've heard them all before and I just listen to them all again. And I do like, I think back and I do remember being a kid and thinking like, okay, no one wants to hear from me. Like they just want to hear So I almost felt bad for the little Tanev boys who just must have been like buried under this avalanche of Mike stories all the time.
And I guess it's amazing that, you know, he raises two kids that get to the National Hockey League. Terrific story there. But that's got to suck as a parent sitting at the ACC on Saturday and 2 minutes into the game. You see your son struggling to get off the ice and teammates picking up his teeth. And we talked to Del Zotto after the game and he's like, yeah, I've never done that before. I got four of his teeth.
No, he was shook. Like I know he kind of made a joke about it. Like I'll put him under the pillow, but you could tell like it does take a lot. It's really hard to kind of shake players. And I think him like picking up a guy's teeth and then the stories of how they were embedded in Tanev's tongue, I think there were guys that definitely were shook on that team from what happened there.
And when I mentioned Besser getting his due nationally, like Friday at practice, you know, he was the story, and like hockey night and all the national networks, like they were there after practice. They wanted a piece of Besser. Again, pregame Saturday, all the same reporters, but right back down Besser Avenue. What I thought was amazing, though, was so he steps up on one of the biggest stages in hockey, Saturday night, Air Canada Center, the Leafs, Austin Matthews, hockey night in Canada, the bright lights, everything. And had an amazing game. Like maybe I know he had the hat trick against the Penguins.
No. This was better. I'm telling you right now, like the goals were great against the Penguins, but I remember looking at that game in his first couple of shifts and he was doing like these like little tiny things, like, and was just great defensive plays. I mean, it's more than a little thing. Like he strips Matthews of the puck on his first shift. I remember like second shift, I'm like, holy shit. Like he's playing really well tonight. And I remember hoping that he'd get some kind of offensive output so he would get recognized for this effort. And it got better as it went on. Babcock hard match. Me and others thought that Kadri would have been the hard match for Babs. He hard matched Matthews against Besser, and Besser rose to the challenge. Like that is for sure the most complete game he's ever played as a Vancouver Canuck that I've ever seen him play. Like he was so good defensively, and you know that the shot that he didn't score on, the one that rang off bar and bar in overtime, was his best shot of the year. Like it just missed. But that was insane how much effort, like he ends up tumbling into the ice. He didn't see, like he shot it so hard. He didn't even see where it went. He put everything into it, man. And I saw that in that game and I thought like this is peak Besser right now this season. I'm not sure he has a game like that again.
Right. And the goal he did score was stupid too. Like forget the shot. The knocking the puck, like it went glass and was going out hard. And he just reaches out and zing and knocks it down. Like, and yeah, there's an element of luck there, but like the guy's hand eye, like it was really good. I can't imagine that he's going to score another goal this year that in my mind will top that for that play. Just to be able to reach out and knock the puck out. And it was like not just direct, it was off the glass. And it, no big deal. He just like, he was a boss, and he scored there. But so again, all the buildup of the attention Friday, the attention Saturday, he does this as the game of his life in the NHL. And it was me, you, and Batch after. Like, there was not a single Toronto guy that wanted to talk to him after the game.
No, which was great for us. Like I think he's better when it's just like a smaller group and we can ask him other stuff. But you're right, they had. Like for 2 days, it had been like, where's the super rookie? We got to talk to the super rookie. We need more comments from the super rookie. And then the game was done and they were moved on to like, why didn't Austin Matthews play on the power play in overtime?
Right. I think the minute the Leafs won, like if Besser had won his second goal of the game, then he probably would have, but it was like, Leafs win. All right. We're over. We're taking a right. You guys go left and away we go. Again, so that was Toronto. And then Sunday night, they played back-to-back to start this trip. We both had to get from Toronto to Montreal. And you thought you had had your travel issues getting from Toronto to Montreal, but little did you know.
Yeah, like I did not – like I don't want to keep harping on my brutal travel experience.
That's what this whole podcast is about, brutal travel.
Because like I did – okay, so they're playing them back-to-backs, right? And I felt I had a secret weapon because I want to be – Like, I want to be the energized media guy, right? Like, it's like, I want to be sharp. I want to come up with good questions. I want to be on my game, right? So my secret weapon the next day, Toronto after Montreal, was I was going to take, everyone said, like, okay, you really want to, like, not have a long travel day, take the Island Airport. So the Island Airport's right downtown. It's like a 5-minute drive from my hotel. My flight was at 12:30. I woke up at like 10:45. I crawled out of bed. I was like, it was such an amazing, I felt so well rested. And I was like, I'll take this $7 Uber ride over to Island while you're driving, you know.
I took a train, a 7 o'clock in the morning train from downtown to Pearson, and then I was going to fly Pearson to Montreal. So I'm on a train. I'm up at like 6-something on a train at 7, and you're sleep. Damn you, you're sleeping until 10:45.
Right. So that was it was the secret weapon that I had in my back pocket. I'm like,
I didn't even know there was an Island Airport.
I'm going to show up to this game so refreshed. I'm going to get back. I'm going to get to Montreal, time to like chill out in my hotel, then still get to the rink, you know, energized. And then I get to the Island Airport and it's Armageddon. Like, it's a war zone there. There's not a spot on the floor to sit down. Like, all of these flights have been delayed and I forgot, but it was right at the end of like school holidays. So all of these university students are going, cutting all over, you know, the Eastern Canada to get to wherever, to get to Thunder Bay and Laurentian, to get out east, to get to the school there, to get to McGill. So like, there's nowhere, like, all the flights are delayed. I'm sitting, the one corner I can get to sit down and do some work is like by a bathroom, like, and it reeks. And it's constant flushing and there's constant guys in the air, but there's no other, like, nowhere on the floor to sit. And in the midst of this war zone of all these like bags and people, I see Adam Oates just standing there looking so lost. And I'm like, all right, as long as I don't look as lost as Adam Oates, I'm going to be okay. So that was my, what the hell do they call that in deception? Like, my token. Like, I just need to constantly look at Adam Oates' despair, and that'll give me energy. And it's so bad to say, like, but I do get energized by others' misfortune. Like, when I heard that iMac had got screwed by his flight and he had to go back to Newark, I felt like a lift. I was like, yes! It's not like someone out there is having a worse time than me. So I just constantly looked at Adam Oates, but I barely made it to that game. Like, I landed, you know, the flight took off just before game time, like 4:30 or something like that. I had to grab my luggage. I like raced to the arena to get there in time for Travis Green before the game. So it was, I feel bad complaining about all this stuff, but it was not fun. It wasn't a fun experience.
No, but this is the week for complaining. Right. It won't be every week, but I think people dig the behind the scenes stuff that we're able to bring you on a podcast like this one. Podcast is always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. Check out the New Year bonus event on right now. Eagle Ridge GM, $14,000 in discounts. Get huge savings on the largest selection of Silverados and Sierras in stock. Go to eagleridgegm.com for all the details. So you made it to Montreal, and you're glad you did, because that's been one of the highlights of this trip so far. We had been discussing and debating, and we both know, we know that Edler de Besser is a thing. Like, it is. It's been building all year, and, you know, people can try and shoot it down, and people can piss all over when Edler does pass it to Besser because he's not scoring right now, but it's not happening with any regularity. And so
for a while, it wasn't happening at all. And we had constantly been talking, like, how, like, I'd been trying to figure out in my head, like, how do I approach Travis on this? What's the best way I can word my questions? And I remember sitting in Toronto at the game with you on press row, and like, I'm going, like, what do you think about this question on, like, I was trying to out loud work out my questions about Edler and, figuring out, I was thinking that on an off day, I would like present my case, right? Like present. So I'd been I was joking about it in the province, but I'd legitimately been working on my string of questions and how I was going to broach this topic. And I was going to do it on one of the off days, and I get to Montreal. My luggage is there. I'm not in a great mood to be going down this like complicated, like, this is a big story to me. Like, this is one of the overarching narratives that has been going on all season. So it's important, and you're only going to get at it once, I figure. So I'm like, the Montreal exchange with Travis is wrapping up, and out of the blue, I hear you say, like, okay, Travis, I tried to ask you this last week. I don't think I did a good job of it. I'm going to re-ask this question and I'm going to reword it. I'm laying in, what the hell? Where is this fucking guy going with this? And then all of a sudden you go, basically when you say to him, when you're watching video, and the audio is great. The whole interview, I think the audio is amazing. And I put it on the last edition of the Provies. You can listen to the whole thing. But then you say, like, when you're watching video, does Edler look off Besser? And the joy that this brought Travis Green, I don't know why it brought him such joy, but he loved, like, either he thought it was ridiculous or he agreed with us. Like, there was something going on because his eyes lit up. He thought it was hilarious and he had some great answers and it led to this great exchange, which was both, I thought, the whole thing, it's funny, it's informative. I think by the end of it, he does say, like, yeah, look, there are times where I wish he'd pass. He essentially says, there are times where I wish that Edler would pass to Besser more. But he doesn't see Besser as a Finn who he's trying to, make sure doesn't score all the goals.
Right. But then we had to get to the bottom of Besser's ethnicity because he's from Minnesota. There's quite a few Scandinavians in Minnesota. He's fair haired. We didn't know. So we had
How did you decide that was going to be the moment? Like what, how did that?
I don't know. I just kind of had this epiphany, but I felt like there was a sense of release and relief on his part too, that this question finally had been posed. Like he knows again, like he probably reads the Provies. I'm sure he reads the Provies. Like he's in tune to what's going on around him. And there was a sense of kind of like, oh, finally somebody, I've got some things I want to get off my chest here about this. And so you're right. He laid it out there. And yet you look at the numbers since January the 1st, Edler is right behind Brent Burns. Like as we sit here recording this today, he's third in the NHL here in the new year. So, I mean, we're a couple of four games. It's not many. But in shot, Edler in shots on goal is among the league leaders and has almost twice as many as Brock Besser. So you tell me, Jason Botford, is Edler passing to Besser? The numbers say no.
No, he is shooting. Like, there is a lot of Alex Edler right now in the Canucks offense. It seems every game he's getting double-digit shot attempts, which normally I think is pretty good. But Alex Edler has no, like, his shot, like, he used to have a decent shot. Like, his shot is gone. Like, it's just gone. I don't know where it is. And that's why, like, there's so many layers to all of this, including, like, Friedman out there. Like, he's been working on this story for a long time. And, like, Bulis, like, Edler passes to Besser a few times, and Bulis, like, jumps up and says, see, gotcha, it doesn't work. And I'm like, why the fuck? Like, that's not – to me, that wasn't very Bulis-y. Like, he's usually more or less knee-jerk than that. Like, he's usually, like – he'll chill out and if over time he could present a case where the passes like that, I found that super odd. So Bulis jumps up and he says, like, see, it doesn't work. And it was actually a great power play. Like, they had multiple chances and Besser had like a great cross ice pass where they nearly scored on. And he had this other terrific shot on net where Edler passes to him and he sweeps into the side of the net and he's trying to hit Daniel's stick. And if you watch the replay, he nearly hits it. He's actually trying, and he was explaining this to me after the game, he was trying to deflect the puck in the net off Daniel Sedin's stick. Like, that's the fucking accuracy that this guy has and thinks he has with his shot. Like, I want a guy shooting that. And the backdrop of all of this is that the days leading up to when it exploded, you had done all this research on the past, like, couple of seasons and the production of the other two main components of this first unit power play. That's Alex Edler and Henrik Sedin. And Alex Edler, you found, had scored his last goal, power play goal, was last February. Like, that's incredible to think about. The last goal at that point for Henrik was 108 games ago. We're now 110 games into the last time, or he's got one goal. Is that it? He's got one. The last time he scored a power play goal was 110 games ago. And in that time, he's got 110 games. He has 10 power play shots on net. And then the kicker to all of this is that that in these 110 games, where he's gone without a power play goal, he has four primary assists. It's not freaking working on that side of the net Edler's not working. Then you have Besser, who's cleaning up in rookie scoring, cleaning up, leads all rookies in power play points, has been among the leader all season long in power play points. He's a playmaker. He's got a shot. He's got everything. Like, why not funnel the – like, why – I don't know. I can't understand for the life of me how everyone wouldn't want the power play funneled through the guy that's the exploding rookie and not to the other side with Edler, who's got no shot at one power play goal since last February, and Henrik, who has four primary assists on the power play in 110 games. Like, they'll all, like, it all led up to this, you know, those couple of games. And then obviously Elliot out there talking to scouts or a coach who had noticed this in a pre-scout and actually it had become such a thing that he had a theory as to why it was happening.
Again, we talk about the power of the podcast all the time. Like, now it's taking these things that look like they're kind of small issues with the Canucks, and they're blowing up into the national stories. And we'll see where it goes. Again, like we're on to Edler now. Like, this story, it's not going away. Like, we're keeping a close eye on where. And as I said, in the last four games, he's not passing to Besser very much. Besser's got to get going again.
Sure.
And I'm not concerned about him, but I do wonder about his ability in the second half. And, you know, you made the point here, and I think you were ahead of the curve a little on this one, is that, like, Sutter might be practicing today. We'll find out here shortly. Maybe he plays before they're done on these last two games of this portion of the trip. But Horvat's not coming back until after the All-Star break. And I think these first two games for Sven Berchi back in the lineup are a massive cautionary tale to anybody that thinks, oh, Bo Horvat's coming back, the countdown's on, and then all is going to be fine again. Like, Berchi has been invisible. Like, invisible might be kind, in fact, to him. And I know he's playing with the jaw protector, and that's got to be difficult. And he said he was, you know, he changed the color of tape on his stick because he couldn't find the puck in his feet with the jaw protector. And, like, you know, there would be lots of adjustments. But Horvat's coming back from, you know, a foot injury. Like, he hasn't been able to work out here, probably, or not very much. Not at the level that he's used to as a National Hockey Leaguer. And all of a sudden, you're going to drop him into this cesspool that is this group right now. And are people expecting him to be the savior? Like, if you're in that group that thinks, oh, when Bo Horvat gets back, all is going to be fine. But it's going to take him a while to get up to speed.
Well, I think people have to be ready. Certainly, people have to be prepared for that. And Berchi was able to work out like normally, was able to do cardio like normal, was able to skate a lot more than a guy with a broken ankle would have been able to skate. It's foot injuries in the middle of a season, especially ones, by the time he comes back, it'll be 8 weeks. So by the time, like I said, 8 weeks, he's missed 2 months of the middle of a season. And the problem is when you come back, And other guys have talked about this. When you come back, you're almost at a beginning of the season or training camp mode. Other players and the league has the game gets harder. It gets tougher. It gets tighter as the season goes on. And in January and February, it's almost like the peak of an NHL season, because by the time you get to March, some of the best teams have their playoff spot secured. There's an exhale there. Like, this is when the good teams turn it up a notch, especially in February. And it's going to be difficult for Bo to be parachuted into this lineup, be considered the savior. He's going to, you know, save the world here, and then do it having not played any hockey in 2 months. Like, that, it's a huge ask. And it may take him a couple of weeks or 3 weeks to get up to where he was when he left off. And the problem is that next step, you run into the trade deadline wall. And there's always after a team takes away players and then deals them off psychologically, you know, a lot of players mentally, and the team is very fragile right now mentally, but at that deadline, mentally, a lot of players see like, okay, they've given up on us. They've given up on the season. And that's the way it sure looked last year, because I remember after that deadline, there was this string of games where if Ryan Miller was not like that, that was the string. There was a stretch there where it's as good as Ryan Miller ever looked as a Vancouver Canuck. And like, it could have been way worse if he wasn't playing that well.
Yeah. And I think that's got to be the fear for everybody, is that, you know, this thing looks like it's angling to another, and that, like, there's 39 games to go. Like, last year when the bottom fell out, they packed it in after the trade deadline. That kind of signaled the beginning of the end for the guy. I mean, it's the second week of January. And so, yeah, with Horvat and Sutter back, you'd like to think that they're going to be a better team, but like there was just such good energy around this bunch in those first 15, that you know we'll talk about forever. And I just don't know how Travis Green is going to, even if he gets healthy, a healthy bunch back, you know, how he's going to be able to recapture the spirit of this group and try to salvage this season, because that's where they are right now. They're in salvation mode, and we're just past the midway mark.
Right, and the good news to me is that I think Travis has the energy to do it. Like, he has like he's an extremely hard worker. He talks about, like, all night long, like, figuring out, talking, thinking about his lines, and he's, like, texting back and forth with Kluche. Like, he pours a lot into the job. The last two coaches did not. So we can say, yeah, teams faded under Willie. They gave up with Torts. I don't think you're going to see the same reaction with Travis Green. I do give him a better chance at working with this group to get their way out of it. Like, he's going to keep, you know, banging the drum that we will get better. We will get better. We will get better. Like, there was none of that with Willie. Willie just, and I talked about it at the beginning, but he just checked the fuck out. And Torts never was invested. He would just come in and cheap shot players. And he was just, and he, I think he's admitted it since, that he wasn't ready to be coaching that year. So I tend to think that they're going to be able to avoid the drop off that they've had previously. But the one thing that keeps coming up for me is, like, it's not a good team. Like, they're just not a good team. And I said, I was on Bruff and Halford, and I said, like, none of these offseason moves have worked. And people then said, like, what about Vanek? What about Vanek's been good. He's been fine. But the problem is that they added Vanek, they added Delzato, they added Gagne, they added Burmistrov, and they're still at the bottom of the league in offense. And that's with Brock Besser. Like, that's with Besser having a season no one ever thought he could have had. So they made the offseason moves they did. They have a worse record. They're similarly at the bottom of the league in goals per game. And defensively, they've got a worse ranking now than they did at the end of last year.
We'll work our way to the end here because we got to get going to practice. But a couple of things, just a couple of individuals I want you to touch on briefly. And one is, I mean, Gudbrandsson. Obviously, that's a story that's not going away until there's a resolution to the situation here. But something has changed. And I don't know if it was going through Toronto, you know, the center of the firestorm and where most of the rumors start in the hockey world. But since last Saturday in Toronto, like, you know, he's starting to look and play like the guy that he's been built up to be, this big, strong, physical guy, maybe to the detriment of his own performance and the team's, because he's running all over the place and out of position, and Delzato's not necessarily there to mop up for him in that second period the other night where he bats the puck into the net himself. Like, that was a gong show of a shift. But something has changed here, and I don't know if it's him trying to boost his own trade stock, but it's a different looking Gudbrandsson in the last week.
Yeah, and I would think that, I mean, look, his dad is heavily involved in, like, observing the media and what everyone's writing. His dad's got his own theories on, you know, where Gudbrandsson should be played and how he should be played. And so that fan, like, he's totally aware of everything that's going on. So I do think it's a little bit of a, you know, look at me and I thought, for me, it was over when Trevor Linden did that scrum with you requested, and he said, we haven't talked with Gudbrandsson. It's something we'll look at again in 6 to 8 weeks. Well, 6 to 8 weeks was the trade deadline. It's not like the eve of the trade deadline they're going to say, like, Gudbrandsson, we've changed our minds, and now we want to sign you. Like, it's just not – to me, that signaled the end. And I think that if anyone was looking at, you know, trying to read between the lines, when you hear a GM saying, we're not going to do anything for 6 to 8 weeks – okay, you're not into Eric Gudbrandsson. Like, you're just not. Like, it's just, you wouldn't say that. You would say, like, it's a priority. It's something we've got to look at. We haven't talked to him yet, but we will. And his dad, agents and all that stuff pick up on that kind of energy and pick up on words like that. And I think everyone knows, everyone has a pretty strong feeling of where this is going to end up. And you are seeing Eric Gudbrandsson hit more. Maybe he's feeling better. Maybe he is feeling healthier. I haven't seen him the last run of, you know, big hits that he's been throwing. I haven't seen that really, I don't know, maybe the first couple of weeks that he was a Canuck. He's still underwater in terms of possession. He's still got a lot of shot attempts against, but he is doing what you would hope And I remember I've had lots of talks this season on here saying, like, I don't see the physical side of Gudbranson, and that's bad. Like, a lot of people, I test people across the hockey, are seeing the same thing I'm seeing. They're saying, like, where is the big, bad physical Gudbranson? Well, last few games, you haven't had to say that.
So, well, he ramps things up physically. I'm not sure what's going on. You touched on it in the privies the other night, but Jake Virtanen looks like he's sort of withdrawn here in the last little bit. Yeah, this is a guy that, you know, I mean, we went through that in November about hits and the hit count and, you know, 10 hits a shift or whatever it was. And but his performance had been at a pretty high level throughout. I don't notice him out there. And, you know, Wilson steamrolled him the other night. And I don't know. But I would agree. Since Christmas, he just, again, looks to me like he's sort of taken a step back right now.
Yeah, and people are mad that he didn't react to Wilson on that play, but like he's going to take big hits, and he's got to, you know, in turn, he's got to, you know, when there's opportunities, he's got to do what Ben Hutton did or pick. Like, it just, like, they need stuff like that emotionally right now to help them because they are a fragile group. But I was fine with the way that he was playing heading into the Christmas break, and I felt he was getting better, and I felt every game you were seeing, like, there were moments where you're saying, that's for 10, and he's like crashing the net, and he's using his speed, and holy shit, look how fast he is. And I haven't really, like, the Toronto game, he was okay, I guess, and I wanted to see him in overtime. I thought that was a great opportunity to throw him a bone, and Travis said he was just about to put him in, but never got his chance. But collectively, since the new year, and he was sick, so maybe, you know, he missed a game because he was sick, so maybe that ties into it all. But this is not, like, this is the low point of the Virtanen season. Like, he hasn't been Jake. He hasn't been the Jake that I saw in November and December. And he's been on the wrong side of possession, which he doesn't usually do. He hasn't been good enough defensively. He's not adding stuff physically, and he's not creating offense. So all of it, maybe it's who he's playing with, but that's a reality. It's been happening.
And Louis Eriksson, 17 without a goal, has 2 points, 2 assists in those 17 games. I think he's gone 7 now without a – like, there's no bottom line. Does he stay in this lineup, or do you think at some point – like, and they get nothing out of him. And people can say, oh, he does little things. I don't see the little things. The penalty killing is cratered. I don't know. You tell me. Like, what do you think he brings to this mix right now?
Yeah, I think that this run is as bad, as poor as Eriksson has played. Everyone, like, a lot of people thought, like, how could you not bounce back from 24 points? I'm not sure right now that he's going to get to 24 points again this season, especially if Travis continues to use him. Like, like right now, Travis has kind of given up, I think, in some ways, on him providing offensive spark. And maybe he'll revert back to it. Maybe we'll see Eriksson at some point back with the Twins. He certainly doesn't seem to like Granlund with the Sedin Twins. But this is, like, we're reaching, like, the low point of the Eriksson era. Like, this is as disappointing. Like, yeah, last year was extremely disappointing. But the last, like, 6 weeks, 5 weeks, that's the 17 games. This is as low as I've felt about him, because I don't think he's doing a great job defensively. I don't think he's helped, like, remarkably on the penalty kill. I think he's a much better player than what he's been, but it's on, and he can be. Like, I think he's obviously better than what we've seen for the past month. It's on Travis, and it's on that coaching staff to get that out of him again, actually. Like, and maybe a scratch. He uses scratches to motivate guys. There's a guy that needs, I see, a lot of motivation, because I remember when he went on that run, 10 points in 10 games, what started it all? Travis sitting him down and saying, like, you got to go to the net more. You got to be harder. You got to win more. You got to do all these little things. You got to win more puck battles. And he pointed out different areas where Eriksson could have barreled and crashed the net and didn't. And it maybe a scratch will help him. I think that he's got to be on the list. And like, I was on with Halford and Brough, and they said, like, all of the guys that Green is scratching, like, fit this same mold that he wants them to play harder. Well, I think everyone wants Eriksson to play harder.
Well, and you know, we're told when he's at his best, he's just this magician in those 5 feet around the goal. Right. Like, he's got 17 games without a goal. And we talked about guys and power play droughts. You were shocked when I told you, I think we were sitting in press row in Toronto. This is where it all started, in fact, when I was looking at goal droughts on the power play. Louis Eriksson hasn't scored a power play goal since here in Columbus last February. So we're coming up on a calendar year for a guy that's out there on the second unit. I know he missed time with injury, but when he's been in the lineup, he's on the second unit. He's supposed to hound these pucks in that 5-foot area around the blue paint. He has one freaking power play. And it was a total sitter. Daniel drew the goalie out and he just passed in front and wide open net for a tap in for Louis Erickson. That's the last power play goal that he has scored since January 1st, 2017. It's now into the second week of January 2018. So, you know, people keep, oh, he's better player. I'm not sure. I don't know. I hope for the Canucks' sake he is. They're never going to get the value out of that contract. We knew that, but this is crazy right now. And it's, you know, I think this is something else that I kind of threw out there earlier in the week. Like, it's 6 over 6. I get that, $36 million, but he's getting $8 million in each of the first 2 years, like cash in hand with the signing bonuses and everything else. The contract, you know, it slides from there, but the first 2 years are $8 million per for Louis Erickson. He's got 16 goals as a Canuck. At the end of this season, he'll have walked away with $16 million. If he doesn't score again, $1 million per goal for Louis Erickson. Come on. Anyhow, it's been a hell of a week. You look fresh, though. You got some new clothes, or at least different clothes that I saw you the last time. My luggage is here now, so I'm happy. My wife will be happy because the suitcase arrived, and hopefully we put all this behind us. That's going to do it for the podcast from Columbus. No podcast next week, by the way, because Canucks are on their 5-day break, and I am ducking out of town, so we'll reconvene when they start playing some hockey again. But as always, the podcast, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam, proud sponsors of community hockey. Eagle Ridge GM, your one-stop car and truck center where everyone is a part of their hockey family. Yeah, it's been a remarkable run here out on the road. Two more stops, Columbus and Minnesota, and God willing, the luggage will follow. That's the podcast here on Province Radio.